Thank you. Michael Riley, I'm director of the School's History Project in England. Teachers in many other countries look to England for best practice in school history education. For many years, Ofsted have told us that history is one of the best taught subjects in the curriculum. And year after year, the pages of Teaching History and the annual School's History Project Conference ooze with creative and rigorous practice in school history teaching. Why do the panel think that history teaching in our country is so good? I'm happy for anyone to answer.
Okay, I think we can begin by supposing this is a non-adversarial question, if I can put it that way. Indeed, it's a rather encouraging question. Why do members of the panel think the teaching of history in this country is so good? What is the explanation for that? Anybody wish to suggest an explanation? I must urge the panel that they are here to answer the questions.
Okay, I'll begin. I think we could all offer answers to it. I mean, I think it's really important. I'm really grateful to Michael for acknowledging that kind of starting point, that Ofsted's last report, and they will produce another one this year, looking back at 3 years, but they said there is much to celebrate in the history teaching in our schools. They did say there's no room for complacency, but they wanted really to record that the quality of teaching, particularly at key stages 3 and 4, is good and often better. They did have more concerns about what's happening in primary, but there's a real acknowledgement of the strengths. And I think there are a number of reasons. We did go through, and Kenneth Baker will be able to talk more about that if you want to hear it, a lot of battles about what the nature of history teaching in our schools should be. And those were difficult and uncomfortable times. I mean, I can remember speaking passionately at debates when the national curriculum was first being proposed. And we went through a tough time working out what is the kind of history we want to teach in our schools, both the debates about the content that should be taught, but also the balance between content and a decent understanding of the nature of historical knowledge. That, I mean, they can raise questions about what is history. And we had a number of those debates very publicly and really worked to thrash out, I think, a very sensible understanding. And certainly the HA conference in 2002 talked about, we've had that debate about where the balance lies, and we feel we've got the tools to do the job. And if you look now, as Michael mentioned, other countries looking to this country, if you look at the new Australian curriculum, their list of their understanding of what historical knowledge and understanding involves draws very, very heavily on the kinds of concepts and processes that you can see in the current curriculum. So I think that real kind of thrashing out what is the nature of historical knowledge has really helped give teachers a clarity about what is it that they're doing in the classroom, what are they teaching, but also enabling students to understand the nature of the knowledge that they have. The other critical thing, and I'll shut up in a minute, that I think that we have really led the way, and I think where numbers of other departments are learning increasingly from history departments, is in seeing history, I mean, as it originally meant, as an inquiry. And I think Michael plays no small part in this, actually. The notion of real inquiry questions that are engaging and stimulating and give scope to children actually to find out for themselves, to work out, to argue, to develop that capacity for independent thinking in answer to a real question that matters. And with a serious end product, I think we've got better about how we want students to communicate their findings about the past. But I think that notion of history as inquiry and ways of structuring those inquiries, both in the kind of long term and the short term, are absolutely critical.
Thank you for that. I suppose one might want to ask the adversarial version of this question, which is, what are the criteria by which you decide how the teaching is good? And good compared to what?
Well, it can't be all that good if fewer people are studying at 16, which is what the pattern is in history today. And far fewer people are pupils are learning at 16 than any time in our history. It's really very sad. When I was devising the national curriculum, made it compulsory up to 16. It was later dropped by Ken Clark. I think the only country that allows their youngsters to drop history at 13, 14 is Albania. other countries in Europe would never consider it for a moment. And that's a pity, but that's history. That's happened, as it were. And I think that if pupils had been really inspired at the primary level and in the first early years of secondary, many more would go on. I happened to share a taxi coming here with a head of a good head of a Midland school, and he said, who's retired, and he said, the best history teachers in his time in his school were always those who could tell a story, an exciting story, a page-turning story, what is going to happen next. And so I stand very clearly on the side of the acquisition of sequential knowledge, if you like. We were asked to sum up in two lines what we all stood for. Mine was, teaching of history should focus upon the acquisition of sequential knowledge rather than focus upon the skills of acquisition and empathetic understanding. That's where I stand, so I'm right here on the left, as you can see. And I think that there's a real challenge to turn the pupil on, as I was turned on. I was turned on, and I loved history. I really did want the page turned. I wondered what was going to happen, whatever it was. And I think you have to infect your students with that love. If that is what I would define as really good teaching in any subject, you can actually pass it on as a virus to your students. Then they will continue it up to 16.
Any other member of the panel wish to speak on this?
Well, I didn't want to go first, being a history teacher, talking about why history is taught so well. It seems slightly arrogant, and it is incredibly frightening to speak in a hall with so many history teachers. Can I just ask you to raise your hand if you're a teacher? Even more frightening, right? Okay. As Nicholas Kinloch once said, the views that I'm expressing are entirely my own and probably won't be shared by anyone else in the country. Which is probably true of your views, Nicholas. I would say that the history teachers that I come into contact with, or have come into contact with in the last 10 years since being in the state sector, are passionate about their subject in a way that I don't come across, and I have to be very careful here since this is being recorded, I don't come across in other departments in my school. At least it's rare. I went to a conference 2 weeks ago, the SHP conference, at which many history teachers attend, returned to school to find other teachers in the school limping towards the end of term, and yet history teachers returning to school enlivened, emboldened, fresh with ideas, buzzing with new ways of teaching something and looking forward to September. That's rare in teaching at this stage in the year. I think the national curriculum actually has a big part to play in it. I think at the moment it's broad, it's flexible, it does emphasize a chronological approach to history teaching. I wish Ofsted would enforce the history curriculum. It's not enforced. So this patchy approach to history, which you find in some schools, largely academies to their shame, is condemned by the national curriculum, and Ofsted should enforce the national curriculum. I think the network of history teachers has grown over the last 10, 20 years. I think that's due to various factors that I could go on at length to describe. I think there's a very sophisticated understanding amongst history teachers that it is not just telling, it is teaching. I could rattle through the 50 key dates of the British history, well, according to me, and I could tick them all off and say that I've now taught. Well, I've told them, but whether my bottom set year nines have understood them is very different. And lastly, I think that the passion that history teachers have for their subject is shared by many of the pupils who then go on to have a love for history later on in life.
Thank you very much. Chris,
do you want to? Yeah, just a couple of points. I agree with Steve. One of those debates where I'm going to say I agree with quite a lot, I suspect, just like the prime ministerial debates. I agree with Steve that we have a structure that generates pretty high quality. The curriculum, as presently constructed, works intelligently with the grain of the way teachers teach, and we recruit pretty high caliber people into history teaching. There is something that we need to remember. One of the things that Ken Baker did, which was an enormous achievement, was for the first time since compulsory education began in this country to establish a curriculum that set out the entitlement for all learners, irrespective of the school they were in and their level of attainment or ability. It was certainly true that in some grammar schools, history was very well taught, and in vast numbers of secondary moderns, it simply didn't appear. The notion of a comprehensive curriculum for a comprehensive education system was an innovation of 1988. The challenge for us, and I think we'll come back to this later on, is how we develop that in some pretty challenging times in terms of school structures and curricula. I'm sure I'll come back to that later.
Okay. Anybody in the audience feel very strongly on this issue of whether teaching is good or not and what the criteria are for determining it? It is, of course, interesting that until the Battle of Education Act, most people left school at 14, so the period when people have studied history to 16, if they ever did, is pretty short. That isn't to say it might not be a good idea, but we need a perspective on it. Anybody else want to come in on this? Okay, good.
I just wanted to say...
could you tell us who you are, please?
Sorry, it's Alison Kitson. I run the History PGC here at the Institute, and I'm a member of the HA. Just a couple of things in response to what Kenneth Baker said about the number of children opting to study GCSE falling and that being somehow a symptom of bad teaching. I think I'm right in saying that history is still the most popular optional subject at GCSE. So that's the first thing I wanted to say. And the second thing I wanted to say is just to refer back to Heather's point earlier, that I talk to teachers in many schools where pupils want to study history GCSE and are not allowed to do so. And the reason they're not allowed to do so is that they are unlikely to get a grade C GCSE. And the reasons for that we know, and Heather's alluded to already, about league tables, and if you're a head teacher and the pressure is to get 5A to C, then there are some subjects, maybe not even GCSEs, where you will get your grades more easily. Mm. So I actually kind of disagree with the premise of Mr. Baker's point.
This perception that history is difficult and therefore it puts some people off or it puts off those who are concerned with league tables is a serious consideration, I think. There are one or two more people who'd like to come in on this.
Martin Spafford, I teach history in Waltham Forest in East London. I was just surprised by Kenneth Baker's proposing the narrative of history and the skills, empathy and imagination as being opposites and saying he was for the one and not the other. I don't understand why we're not actually working as history teachers to develop all of those with our young people. I absolutely agree with the captivating nature of story, but there are many stories, there is not one story, and the skills to be able to critically respond to and analyse the stories that children as adults encounter through their lives, the stories that they are told in the media, whatever, those skills are important skills that we as history teachers also need to develop. It's not just about learning a story, it's also about knowing how themselves to cope with and to criticise and to analyse story.
May I comment on this?
Okay, before you do, Ken, I would like to say I have a great deal of empathy for the case you just made.
Well, when you're a great historian like David Canline, empathy is part of your life cells, it's part of your DNA. But I was full of empathy when the Secretary of State, I went into one history class back in the 80s, and they were 12 and 13-year-olds having to imagine themselves in a medieval village which plague struck. Now, they could learn a bit about plague, the shilling in the armpit and all of that, but how could they do that without understanding the feudal nature of the society of the village and the obligations of various people in the village, the methods of agriculture in the village, and who was going to die, who was going to suffer as a result of dying, what was going to happen? And how could they understand about the political structure of that society at the time? It was just, I thought, a waste of time, quite frankly. And so I was switched off then, and I have other examples as well. Now, when it comes to analysis, I did actually spend Friday going through the history curriculum, which I hadn't seen for many, many years. And I was first amazed at the key skills. Do you know what the first key skill in you're supposed to embark in education, in history? Have you read it? Application of number. I don't know why application of number is one of the key skills that you have to give your... That is in it. It's actually history, in it. History. 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 It is actually... It's on the website. It must be true. I looked it up. I looked it up on AQA, and I looked it up in the Dexel. Well, look it up. Anyway, the sixth was working together. Well, you know, it's giving in and surrendering, in my view. And so I don't entirely agree. And the amount of information, I take your point about the acquisition, you know, training youngsters to analyse evidence. But that seems to have taken it over. You know, if you do the history of the 17th century, you know that Fox's Book of Martyrs came from the Protestant point of view, and there's a Catholic point of view. That's it. But it's very important to understand the martyrdom and the process of Mary's reign, if we're into that particular thing. And so I think far too much is given up to the analysis of source material. In my view, I think that at a later age, when you're becoming a historian at 15 or 16, or for A level, that is much more important, but not, I think, at the early levels.
Steve?
Part of me wholeheartedly agrees with what Lord Baker just said, but it's a debate that happened in the 1980s, and I agree with you. The lesson that you went into in the 1980s, I've no doubt that you saw something like that. I would be horrified today if a member of my teaching community would be doing something as crass as what you've just described. I agree that it went on, and that we've had the revolution in history teaching, and we've moved from a Gradgrindian approach, just facts, facts, facts. That's the way I was taught history by a very dull history master. We moved towards lots and lots of sources, almost asking crass questions about sources. Is this source more reliable than that source? Oh, for good God's sake. And we've moved beyond that, and I think we have a much, much more sophisticated, rich understanding of how pupils use evidence to do exactly what you're wanting them to do.
Anybody else want to come in on
that?
Can
I come on the on the point about key skills, that those key skills are set inside the curriculum as a whole. If you actually look at the history curriculum, the processes that students have to inquire, have to engage in, are about historical inquiry. They are about using evidence and working with that evidence to produce answers which they are required to communicate about the past. Those are the processes, and then the conceptual understanding is set out in terms of the concepts that give history its shape, so things like causation, chronology, those key things that make our knowledge historical and help us to organise it. And then they set out the kind of range and content that needs to be followed. Those key skills are a requirement, and I'm sure Anne Curry would actually comment on the value at times. It's critically important that you can apply number in history if you're trying to talk about why the Great Depression happened or what the rival approaches to sorting that problem out were. It's really important you can look at unemployment figures, that you can read a graph and so on. You cannot do some kinds of history without number, but they are not what defines the history curriculum.
Yeah, of course, from the higher education point of view, in a way we're lucky, we're seeing the sort of finished product that you lot have been producing. But I think the beauty of history, and certainly as an academic, we can say we know lots about all sorts of different things. That's the beauty of history, because it's about people. It's about everything about people. The trouble is with the story idea, I think people have already said this, there's the danger of the one story as opposed to the multiplicity. History is a complex subject. No doubt it's difficult to put that across at primary level, but as it goes on, I think pupils need to learn how complex it is, and the only way they can do that is really by doing it themselves, by not receiving. They've got to be learning, really, and doing things themselves. And the best students that we have are those who've taken that on board. The worst are those who've just received all of these stories and regurgitated them. The best are those who are able to think independently, to question, and to question sources, really. Examining sources is difficult. I think that is perhaps it's even difficult at university level. I think looking at some of the A-level syllabuses, it looks difficult for you lot to teach it and to examine it. I think that's the problem with sources, really.